In this present crisis, government is not the solution to our problem. Government is the problem.
This is the I Spy Radio Show.
You and I have a rendezvous with destiny.
Keeping an eye on big government.
We the people tell the government what to do. It doesn't tell us.
The trouble with our liberal friends is not that they're ignorant. It's just that they know so much that isn't so.
And now, here is your host, Mark Anderson.
Some years ago, probably 7th or 8th grade, so quite a few years ago, I remember arguing about a story on the news and a classmate telling me they couldn't say it if it wasn't true. Ah, the joyful delusions of youth. But I remember thinking even then how badly misinformed she was. Did she miss the part in history class where we talked about yellow journalism? And what about the National Enquirer? And yet, that's where we are today. Still, a population that gets its news and information from the mainstream media, whose job is not to inform, whose job is not to bring accurate information. It is to drive people, like cattle, into the open embrace of the government. This is not new. For as long as there have been newspapers, news has been used to support political aims. While millions manage to somehow still stomach Fox News, and as many people who listen to far better news sources like America's Real Voice or any number of radio shows that are giving genuine truth, tens of millions more still get their news from the ABCs, CBSs, NBCs of the world. So when news is committed to giving you misinformation and disinformation, and some 100 million people get their news from those sources, of course there will be widespread belief and the wrong information. Case in point, there is no FDA-approved vaccine. Yes, they approved a vaccine from BioNTech, Comirnaty. But that vaccine is not available and will not be available until 2022 or even later. In the meantime, they are allowing the Pfizer vaccine as a substitute, but it is not the same drug. Despite the lying mainstream media, Pfizer was not approved. It had its emergency use authorization, or EUA, extended. That's all. But the New York Times claimed it was approved, and other mainstream media went with it. And they knew you'd believe it. Perhaps they knew you wouldn't read past the headline. Perhaps they knew you wouldn't go to the source documents, the letters from the FDA. Perhaps they knew there was still a smoldering spark of, well, they couldn't say it if it weren't true. Here are two points of logic to keep in mind. If they could mandate an EUA drug, they would have done that long before now. If the Pfizer vaccine is the same as the BioNTech, then why not simply approve the Pfizer drug? Here we are, the weekend of 9/11, 20 years on. Imagine 20 years ago, the day before 9/11, you woke up to the news that you're about to be forced to accept a vaccine for a virus that, even without the vaccine, you had a 99.8% chance of recovery. But you had to take it anyway, despite the vaccine not even finishing its clinical trials yet. That all the animals who did take it died when exposed to the virus. That unless you take it, you won't be able to shop. You won't be able to go out to eat. You won't be able to attend sporting events or your kids' school plays. You won't be able to travel on airplanes. Unless you do what we say. That sounds like total control to me. Isn't that what Al-Qaeda was after? I'd like to welcome now Senator Dennis Lithcom. He represents Senate District 28, that's in the Klamath Falls area. He's also the treasurer of the Oregon Republican Party. Dennis, it's great to talk to you again.
Good morning, Mark. It's good to be on this morning. We got a ton of rain last night, which is fabulous for the fires that are in our area.
Sure.
And it's great to wake up to rain. I tell you, it's something we haven't experienced in a long time.
That's for sure. So this weekend is kind of a big one. It's the 20th anniversary of 9/11, and so I'd like to start off our discussion with that. So many powerful memories from that day. Where were you on 9/11 when you heard about the towers, and what are some of your standout memories of that day?
Yeah, I was by myself. Diane and the kids were running errands. We live about 40 miles outside of Klamath Falls, so we're off in the middle of cattle country. And I remember, you know, kind of hearing it on the radio first, and then going to a television and turning on the television to see, you know, what was going on. it was frustrating not to be able to get a hold of Diane and the family and, you know, whatever. And so it was certainly unsettling to watch this happen before your very eyes in real time and then wonder what are the ramifications, who's behind it. All the unknowns come flooding into your mind during that period as well.
Absolutely. You know, one of my standout memories was this sense after it all happened, after the dust literally settled, the sense of really being united as a country, that we were going to fight back and we were going to find out who had done this and we weren't going to take this. But, you know, now looking back, if someone had told me 20 years ago that we'd be less free after this, that with, you know, we'd have churches being shut down by the government, full-blown censorship on social media, businesses shut down, mandates and more, I don't think I would have believed it. I can barely believe it now.
Yeah, but my last newsletter, or maybe it was a newsletter in front of the last one, was titled Unimaginable. Mm-hmm. You know, we live in times that you and I couldn't have imagined 20 years ago. Looking forward, we wouldn't have never said in 2021, I bet this is what we'll experience. We just couldn't have done it.
No. Well, and like I said, looking back, we were very united that day and the days that followed. And you compare that to what we have now. We've got a very fractured society. But we actually did see elements of that soon after 9/11, where the political left wanted to blame America for the attacks, that we weren't inclusive enough, that it was our fault that 9/11 happened. And it took less than 10 years from that. In fact, 7 years. For that to take root in the Obama administration, where a mere 7 years after 9/11, we elected a president who was extremely, well, we'll just say Islamic friendly and who pushes Islamists into positions of influence in the intelligence agencies and armed forces. But do you see us getting back to that sense of unity anytime soon?
I think the problem we face, I can see us getting back there, but the problem we face is one that's perpetrated by social media. Social media kind of destroys the deliberative process, and it widens the political differences because there's so much hatred, if you will, or just vile little, cuss words and people getting gross on social media and flying the finger and yelling and screaming and throwing eggs at Larry Elder and whatnot. And so social media, you know, perpetuates the political polarization that's plaguing the contemporary American, even though the contemporary American waves hi to his neighbor and wants to talk across the backyard fence. They become grounded in their who'd you vote for? Oh, and then there's this political feeling associated instead of policy based on efficiency or cost or return on investment. We have policies that are based on feelings, and then those feelings get manifestly exploded through social media. So it's a problem.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, let's go and take a break there. Coming back, we'll be talking about the new mandates that continue to destroy freedom. Both here in Oregon and nationwide, we'll be doing that with Senator Dennis Lithicum. Stay with us. And welcome back. We're talking today with Senator Dennis Lithicum from Southern Oregon and the Klamath region. This is 9/11 weekend, and we just finished talking about that. And now we're going to shift into what we have 20 years later and a less united, less free America. And Dennis, you sent out a terrific newsletter. All of your newsletters are really terrific. But you sent it out earlier this week that starts out with, quote, Oregon's government is devolving into a perpetual machine of falsehood, folly, and fraud under the onslaught of mandatory edicts flowing from the governor's office. And yeah, that about sums up the current situation here in Oregon. But you go on to discuss, quote, purposeful misuse of exceptions instead of exemptions in the forms created by the governor's political advisors and Oregon Health Authority for anyone seeking to avoid taking their experimental vaccines. So talk to our audience about what's going on here.
You know, I think there's fraud. Senator Kim Thatcher and myself have submitted grand jury investigative requests to the U.S. attorney in the Medford office. And we're hoping to inspire a grand jury to review this because there is there's so much misinformation, disinformation, yes. And mucking with the numbers at every level of this pandemic and the pandemic response. This OHA one that I refer to in my newsletter is a really small subset of what's going on, but specifically the governor's office, her individuals within the OHA, Oregon Health Authority Administration, created what they call exception forms for mandatory vaccines. And yet within the historic legal terms of art, what is valid for a personal individual seeking a personal belief or conscientious objection or religious liberty is an exemption, not an exception. So the officials, quote unquote, I'll put them in air quotes, are really misleading the public. They should have told the public that they're making forms available for asking for or identifying personal exemptions, and instead they created a form for an exception, which isn't a valid term of art and leaves the individual unprotected when it comes to employment law and the potential of for getting terminated from their position if they refuse to take the vaccine. So that was the my newsletter goes on to explain that it's up on Facebook and getting distributed around, and people can write to me at dennis@electdennis.com if they would like to see it or read it, or they're interested, or they face this problem, the potential to get laid off or terminated because they do not want to participate in the experimental vaccines.
Well, and it is very experimental, and I'm sure we'll circle back around to that, but it is kind of an interesting wordsmithing by the governor's office there, because normally you would use exemption. And there's a fine line there, because exception is basically a free pass. It's something out of the ordinary, versus exemption, which is a legal distinction. It's like you don't exist in the group to which the law is being applied. But people make exceptions, you know, the law, but the law creates exemptions because there is a legally defined halo of exemption. If you are this category of person, you get an exemption because the law itself defines that exemption. People making exceptions are making subjective choices. I like you and you'll get an exception. You mentioned this about fraud, and I think that's so true, because right now we're being told that there is an FDA approved vaccine when there isn't. There's one coming, but it's not here now. You actually talk about that EUA process, the emergency use authorization process, which was established after September 11, 2001, ironically enough, that requires individuals must be informed, quote, of the option to accept or refuse administration of the EUA approved product, of the consequences, if any, of refusing administration of the product, and the alternatives to the product that are available and of their benefits. You know, I think this is a really important point, because there is no FDA-approved vaccine now, so they can't be forcing that on you, I wouldn't think. What are your thoughts?
Oh, well, yeah. See, and that's part of, you know, at some point we have to really ask the question, why was ivermectin or HCQ, hydroxychloroquine, why were those kind of taken off the shelf here in the United States of America when they've been used worldwide for 60 years? We have an enormous track record of their efficacy, of their use in many different circumstances all over the world. They're widely available for 10 cents or 25 cents a dose. And somehow the only solution available is this experimental vaccine concoction.
Sure. I can tell you why they removed those, because according to the EUA emergency use authorization, if a viable alternative exists, which they do, as you said, ivermectin and HCQ, the EUA would have to be immediately stripped from all three of the current vaccines. But it begs the question, why were they so focused on pushing these vaccines on a disease that had a 99.8% recovery rate to begin with? It's not like it's a death sentence if you get it.
Right, right. And that, you know, a viable, widely available, adequate supply of these products is there. That would negate the need for the emergency use authorization. Mm-hmm. It mm-hmm. probably also negates the need for Governor Brown and her totalitarian dictates. And we could all go back to living our lives. But the trouble is the elites in power enjoy the power, want to amass more power, and willing yes. to go to enormous extremes to keep their power. We now see, we thought Kate Brown was polishing her fingernails to enjoy the White some kind of administrative appointment from Biden. Now we see Biden following Kate Brown's first go at having OSHA be yes. the boss on the street.
Well, and
that means these OSHA guys at the federal level will be knocking on everybody's door.
Yeah. Well, and if anybody thinks that things are going to get better, things are going to stop with this mandate. They're delusional. They're absolutely delusional. All right, everyone stay with us. We will be talking about those federal mandates coming up next with Senator Dennis Lithcomb. Stay with us. And welcome back. We're talking today to Senator Dennis Lithcomb. He represents Senate District 28. That's down in the Klamath Falls area. And he's also the treasurer of the Oregon Republican Party. So, Dennis, here in Oregon, we have gone from a governor who at one time espoused my body, my choice to shut up and take the vaccine. You have no right to refuse. Your body impacts my body. And if you don't take the vaccine, then mine won't work. And so she has been pushing these mandates. But of course, it's not just the state government. On Thursday, September 9th, Biden issued orders with a rule that forces businesses with 100 or more workers to require the vaccine or weekly testing, and a violation of which could spark big fines. So now we have the federal government weighing in and pushing these mandates. And again, this is for a vaccine that doesn't exist. I know that you're not a lawyer. I'm not a lawyer. But it seems odd that they think that they can get away with a mandate for something that isn't FDA approved, that doesn't even exist yet. I just find that almost unfathomable.
Yeah, I agree with you. And I thought it was interesting that most of the news last night didn't even draw the distinction between the Comirnaty, the BioNTech product that looks or comes from the Pfizer BioNTech conglomeration that created the emergency use vaccine that is currently licensed only as an emergency use product, mm-hmm. and the Comirnaty product, which doesn't yet exist in volume. You know, it exists in a lab somewhere, but it's not widely available. And remember the discussion you just mentioned a second ago that the emergency use authorization licensing was predicated on the lack of adequate, approved, and available alternatives. It's adequate, it's widely available, so they had to, quote, unapprove it, which is sleight of hand. And if you unapprove it, then the president's forcing of 80 million individuals to undergo inoculation for a disease that has a 99.9% survival rate, aside from comorbidities and age risk stratification, is completely untenable. So this won't stand in court. This is just bullying. It's a political bullying from the president's office. It's shameful and repugnant.
Oh, absolutely. And I had mentioned this in the opener, is it really comes down to two questions. If they could legally enforce an emergency use authorization vaccine, like the Pfizer one, they would have done that already. There are three out there under that EU. So if they can legally force it on people, I'm sure that they would have done that already. And then secondly, if the Pfizer is an acceptable substitute for the vaccine that was approved, the Comirnaty, so then why not just simply approve Pfizer? So something is wrong right. here.
Yeah, right, right. Well, and the other thing that's wrong, when you think about it, the other thing that's clearly wrong is the information, the studies, you know, from President Trump's Operation Warp Speed, the fastest EUA in the history of our nation. And nobody's asking, what are the transgenerational impacts? What are the long term? What happens to an individual who was inoculated today 5 years from now? Nobody knows, because nobody has lived that long. And what about a mom who's pregnant today or is currently pregnant and gets the inoculation? What about someone who gets a mom who gets pregnant in the next 6 months or next 18 months or whatever? Nobody has any idea of how this vaccine might impact future generations, what kind of vaccine-induced deregulation of natural immunity might occur, all of these issues. Where is the journalistic investigation for, what's the answer to this? What's the answer to this? All we hear repeatedly from Facebook and Twitter and whatnot is vaccines are safe and effective. Shut your mouth and go home.
Yeah.
It's entirely disingenuous, and it's wrong, and everybody in your audience needs to stand up and fight.
Absolutely. And what I find to be really amazed by all of this is because the reason the Comirnaty isn't even available yet is because the clinical trials aren't finished for that drug. And frankly, neither are the ones for all three of the vaccines. Their clinical trials weren't due to be finished until 2022 or even 2023. And yet we're pushing forward as if this is a fully approved, fully tested drug, as you say, because Facebook and Twitter, they're constantly out there saying, oh, these are safe and effective. They're not. There are, in fact, over 100 variants right now. We don't have enough letters in the Greek alphabet to name them all. And the vaccines don't stop any of them. They don't stop infection. They don't stop the spread, which is what a vaccine is supposed to do. And yet, for some reason, they are now pushing this on Americans. And even worse, I think, they're pushing it on kids, 12 years old. We don't have any idea what this will do to developing young bodies.
Right. As these children grow into puberty and their bodies and their hormones start, you know, developing their bodies into maturity, what does that look like? We have no idea. And aside from that, you know, this is a September 11th program. The Moderna vaccine by itself has 3,429 deaths in the vaccine adverse event reporting system. That's more than were lost in the World Trade Centers. Mm-hmm. The Pfizer vaccine has 9,619, which is three times more than was lost on 9/11. And nobody seems to say, maybe we should ask some more questions. Maybe we should review this data. Maybe we should slow down a little. And we've got the president demanding another 80 million individuals through their private businesses, which he has no authority over, to get this experimental vaccine. This is a tragedy of enormous proportions. Yes. And everybody's got to get out of bed in the morning and say, I'm willing to go to the mat on this one.
Exactly right. Because as I said, this doesn't stop here. If people think, oh, now if we take the vaccine, suddenly we'll be able to return to normal. Suddenly we'll get all of our freedoms back. I'm sorry. This is just opening the door to have even more of them taken away. Dennis, unfortunately, we're up against the clock. I want to thank you so much for your time today.
Well, thank you. It's always a pleasure. I love your show and the conversations you bring to us. So thanks. Keep up the good work.
Thank you. And welcome back. We just got off the phone with Dennis Lithcomb. If you'd like to get his terrific newsletters, be sure to drop him an email at dennis@electdennis.com. And we'll put that up on iSpyRadio.com as well, in case you didn't catch that. In case you missed it, Dennis mentioned a grand jury that they're seeking to impanel, which caught us off guard, and we're looking to have him back on that pretty soon here. We were talking about Oregon's mandates and how the now federal mandates for a vaccine that doesn't exist yet, despite what the media has claimed about it. We're going to continue that discussion for a little bit anyway with best-selling author Scott McEwen. He's the co-author of American Sniper and has his own series of books, all of which can be found on the iSpy radio page as well. Just head to the store tab up at the top. Scott, it is great to talk to you again.
Great to talk to you, Mark.
So here we are, weekend of September 11th, 20 years since then, and we are lurching towards a much less free America. And I find that shocking. And I definitely want to talk to you about that. But we were unable to talk to Dennis about a couple of lawsuits that have been filed against Oregon's governor, Governor Kate Brownshirt. One was just filed Friday morning in Eugene. Another was filed last week on behalf of state troopers and firefighters who do not want these vaccines. And I don't want to get into the specifics of those, but if we could just kind of tap into that dormant recovering lawyer side of you for a bit. Just to recap what I had said previously, despite what the media has claimed, the FDA did not approve Pfizer's vaccine. There were two separate letters. One approved Pfizer's continued emergency use authorization, EUA. The other approved BioNTech's vaccine, Comirnaty, but that's not going to be available until 2022 or 2023, pending, ironically enough, the results of their clinical trials. So in the meantime, they authorized Pfizer's vaccine as a substitute. So let's pause there for a second, because to me, it seems to be a real legal sleight of hand. Is that how you see it?
I would say it's a factual and legal sleight of hand, because for them to refer to the approval and yet the drug that they are contending is approved is not, I think that's just a flat out factual misstatement and legally invalid. Mm-hmm. I mean, I don't see how a judge looking at it with the evidence that you have, and I know that's correct, can look at that and say, look, you cannot say that this is approved when what you're giving these people is not the same thing. So, I mean, we've got a factual issue, which shows that it's basically fraud. And the second issue is, I don't think it's legal.
Mm. Well, it just seems to fail on two simple logic arguments. One, if they could legally mandate an EUA drug, they would have mandated it long before now. And two, right. if the Pfizer vaccine is effectively the same as the BioNTech, then why not simply approve the Pfizer vaccine? But instead, they sidestepped that.
Well, I think they sidestepped it because there's a little thing out there, Mark, and it's called all these negative reactions to these drugs.
Yes.
And I think even this group of people that's being pushed so hard to keep their jobs, if you will, at the executive level, because you know they're getting the same heat that these people get, you know, in the different agencies, three-letter agencies, to do things that are not, if you will, legal, they're pushing back some. And I think that you saw two people leave there, and I think you're probably going to see more people leave the FDA as a result of this pressure they're getting from the executive branch.
I would sure hope so. I hope people's conscience really just gets to them and just won't let them continue to do this. But the reality is the vaccines don't stop infection. They don't stop the spread. And those are the two things that a vaccine is supposed to do. You've got Israel that has something like 85% fully vaccinated and yet has some of the worst infection rates right now. They are into their second round of booster shots after the initial two shots, so four shots total. However, a natural immunity is up to 20 times more effective. It's durable, no need for booster shots, and it's effective and cannot be improved upon. So effectively, people are being forced into taking an inferior product by getting these vaccines. Can the government really force you to buy a lemon when you could have a Lamborghini?
Exactly. I think you know, there's a case that just came out of, I believe it was Georgetown, but it could have been a different law school. And the Georgetown, I believe, law school professor, once again, I know it was somewhere in the Ivy League, sued the government and said, you cannot mandate a vaccine on me because I have already had it. I've already had the disease. I've already had it. I'm recovered. And the prevailing body of data, in other words, not just Israel, but many, many other places are learning that natural immunity is better than the vax.
Yes.
And that you've got 20 plus times things. And we have 100 million people that have been exposed, 100 million out there that have already been exposed to this disease, survived it, and have greater natural immunity than this. So that was what the judge hung his hat on in the federal action that was filed by that guy, and a restraining order was put in place. Mm. So, I mean, that's the one, that's probably the case that the Supremes are going to accept cert on. It's going to move up. I believe it's in the 5th District. I'm not sure, though, out there on the East Coast. But it'll be accepted. And if that's the case, the Supremes accept. Then you got to look at the same logic. And I would at least go there, if I were a federal judge, and say, look, if this is true as to, you know, this one professor, then why isn't it true as to the 100 million people that you're trying to make go get this vax?
Right.
And when we add in the fact that it has negative reactions, and that those people that have natural immunities are seeing worse reactions potential from the drug being administered, then you've got a two-sword, if you will, approach to knocking down this law.
Mm. So,
or executive edict. It's not a law. It's
well, that was actually going to be my next question, is because when you can't pass a law, you create a rule. And that's effectively what right. Biden did. He created the rule to force these vaccinations. So what's the legal distinction there, really, between a law and a rule?
Well, the legal distinction is you haven't had a body of Congress that has gone forward and said, yeah, this is the law for testing. In other words, you're doing what they call executive action, which we both know was really started and messed up with Obama, since he's going to use his cell phone and his pen to do all these executive orders. And it really just became a fiasco. So you've got an executive order, what he's putting down towards an agency that's a rule, which has the same, if you will, force and effect to the extent it's as a law, as far as that agency is concerned, but it's much easier attack at the court level, in my opinion.
Okay, let's go and take a break there. Coming up, we're 20 years past 9/11. We've lost a bunch of freedoms here recently, and we've lost Afghanistan. We'll talk to Scott about that and what that means to our military personnel after this. And welcome back. We're talking with Scott McEwen, the co-author of the New York Times bestselling book, American Sniper, and he has his own line of books out there, all of which you can find on iSpyRadio.com. Just head to the store tab at the top of any page. Scott's latest book is Hell Week and Beyond, a terrific account of what our Navy SEALs go through to become the best of the best. Highly recommend that. And so, Scott, just to pick up one question that we didn't get to in the last one, one of the things that is mentioned in the recent lawsuit against the governor filed by the state troopers and firefighters is the difficulty of a liability, where, true to form, the government holds everyone else responsible for their actions, but not themselves or their co-conspirators. Ruin lives and businesses. Oh, well, it's not our fault that you did what we demanded. So the exception to that, though, as they mentioned in that lawsuit, is willful misconduct. And we've got a situation where there are studies that show that vaccinated people are carrying up to 251 times the viral load as unvaccinated people. You've got an effect called ADE and pathogenic priming. So there are all sorts of complications with these vaccines, and they had to know about these. But how difficult is it to prove willful misconduct?
Well, I think, you know, we have situations where we've seen it in the past. In other words, you know, where we've seen government absolutely, you know, especially with respect to government, where we've seen government that have hidden certain facts, or we've seen prosecutors that, for example, hide data that exonerates a defendant, yet that defendant stays in jail for 20 years on death row. I mean, we see that situation. So willful misconduct is something that has to be very egregious. And I believe it has to be intentional. It has to be basically performed without question by an individual that meant to do wrong. And it has to be done and then adopted by the state, you know, in its performance of whatever task it's doing. So it's a difficult one to get to. Particularly at an administrative level. But, you know, the example that I gave you, for example, with the prosecutor that hides the evidence and then the poor guy sits on death row, then finally they find out, you know, 20 years later that, oh my God, the DNA was there and it wasn't the right person. Mm. That's a very good example of willful misconduct that is actionable against the state.
So if an individual or organization sent the state data and information about, say, that study where vaccinated people carrying 251 times the viral load, sent them information about antibody-dependent enhancement or pathogenic priming, sent them all of this information, would that count as willful misconduct if they continue with those rules now that they've been informed about the problems with these vaccines?
You know, that's a really interesting question. And I, you know, personally believe that, you know, when it comes to the weight of the evidence, and that's one of the things we're dealing with, we're grasping with, if you will, there seems to be so much disinformation out there about what the evidence is. And mm-hmm. we have the Israeli studies, we have many other studies from different countries that absolutely prove what you just said. But the question is, what is the overall body of evidence that exists at any given time? And I think that's really the standard here, is they're contending that that body of evidence does not exist relative to the certainty of the, you know, of the vax people carrying more load, viral load, et cetera. And yet it seems to be so clear from our side, but I still think it's probably at this juncture not accepted science, because the bottom line is they're not accepting it. The CDC's not accepting it. And for whatever reason, the government is denying it.
Well, science, unfortunately, as far as the government is concerned, is that if it agrees with what we want to do, then it's science. But if it disagrees, yeah, then it's clearly not science. And that, I think,
especially Kate Brown.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, here we are 20 years past 9/11. We went into Afghanistan to go after Al-Qaeda and bin Laden, and we ended up staying there for 20-some years. But just to continue that thought there with the immune system and whatnot, because effectively for some people, the immune system becomes compromised when you take these vaccines, and you can actually suffer worse effects when encountering the virus in the wild. That's the effect of an antibody-dependent enhancement, also known as pathogenic priming. So if you're forcing this on the military, if 20% of the military gets ill or incapacitated, or if another 10 or 20% simply quit or leave the forces, I mean, this sounds like a massive national security problem.
It certainly is. And I've seen it personally. I see a lot of my friends that are in the military that really don't want to take the vax, many of whom have already had it, you know, and same situation, like, why should I take it when I've already had it? You know, and women, you know, childbearing women that are basically saying no. And so they're losing a lot of good people. Now, is that by plan? Is that by design? I don't know, my friend, but I'll tell you right now, it certainly is more the R side, the conservative side, that is saying no than it is the D side that says yes, which seems to be the trend. And, you know, so are they trying to keep more of their D side guys, just like in their command structure right now? I think a really good argument can be made. Yes, that's what they're doing.
Hmm. So here we are 20 years later after invading Afghanistan, and I have been shocked. I know you're shocked at the unprecedented loss of freedoms that we're experiencing right now. 20 years ago, if somebody had told you that we'd be that the government would be shutting down churches, shutting down free speech on social media, because it's been proven now that the government was working with social media people in order to shut down discussions about the vaccines and other alternatives and whatnot, shutting down businesses, would you have believed that 20 years ago? I can hardly believe it now.
I can't believe it. And, you know, and one of the things that that our men and women have fought and died for was the right for us to defend that constitution. And, you know, I see a really, really dangerous scenario arising right now where, you know, the reason we asked these troops to fight, notwithstanding the fact that I believe this withdrawal from Afghanistan was a complete mess.
Yes.
At best. But that being said, is what are these guys, these men and women fighting for? They're fighting for a right. At the end of the day, they're fighting for our rights as Americans and under the constitution. And when our constitution is being degraded as quickly and as, you know, haphazardly as it is right now, you got to stand back for a moment and say, you know, what are they really fighting for? You know, I mean, it's really a difficult question.
Well, I know that you have an awful lot of contacts within the military. Talk to us a little bit about what it means to them to watch this Afghanistan pull out and the loss there. And we're now handing the country right back to the Taliban, plus $86 billion worth of equipment. I mean, that's got to be devastating to people that serve there.
It's absolutely devastating. And to the Gold Star families and mothers and fathers and, you know, brothers, sisters, children, et cetera, it's really, really adding insult to, you know, a situation where they've already lost so much and they've already given so much to this country, you know, in the defense of this country with their sons, daughters, et cetera. And now to have this happen, you know, it's you know, and to have it happen the way they did, once again, how can you be so incompetent unless you really wanted to demoralize our people in your withdrawal or have another plan? And so, you know, I'm getting to the point now where I'm saying this is so incompetent, Mark. Is it really incompetent or is it a plan? And I don't go there, man. I'm not that guy. You know that. You've known me now for years. And but I'm telling you, this is so bad and so seemingly, you know, seemingly planned out the way they're doing this, and demoralizing to our troops, to the country, et cetera, and to our rights, you know, maybe this is their planned takeover. Maybe this is their series of events that they want to basically, you know, take control of America for socialism.
Well, I don't know how you can look at Afghanistan and say we've got the best military in the world and supposedly the best military minds in that military, and somehow we're supposed to believe that we couldn't figure out a way to get our own people out of that country, and we couldn't find a way to remove $86 billion worth of equipment. We're supposed to believe that we couldn't figure out a way to do that. That's really hard to swallow.
It's completely obscene. It's absurd. And it doesn't make any sense whatsoever. Mm-hmm. So no, it does not. And beyond incompetence was just blatant. I think that the guy should be charged with a crime. I really do, as a result of what's happened here.
Oh, I absolutely agree.
I really believe that if there was ever grounds for impeachment, we've seen grounds for impeachment right here, because it got to the point where it was just literally insane how incompetent these guys were running this operation, and somebody needs to answer.
Yeah,
obviously the generals aren't being held to answer.
I don't honestly know how you could have done a worse job than what they actually did. So, all right, let's go ahead and take a break. Come back. We'll be talking with Scott about his memories about 9/11. Stay with us. And welcome back. We're in our final segment now with Scott McEwen. He's the co-author of the New York Times bestselling book, America's Sniper. And you can find all of his books up on iSpyRadio.com. Just look for the store tab up there on the top. And so, Scott, being so close to so many people in the military, I'm sure that you have a lot of memories of 9/11. So where were you when you heard about the towers, and what were some of your memories for that day?
I was getting my kids ready for school here in San Diego. And I saw the first jet hit, and I thought, oh, my God, what was that? And when I saw the second one hit, I said, we ain't going to school, kid. We're under attack. Hmm. There was absolutely no question in my mind that we were under attack immediately. And I look back and think about all that we've gone through between then and now, and all the blood, you know, the money, the treasure, if you will, that we've thrown at this, and this withdrawal from Afghanistan, and it would be hard for me to say that I was not extremely disappointed in what I saw there, but it does not diminish the devotion and the if you will, loss of those that we've had for this country for the last 20 years, and we cannot allow that to happen.
No.
Because, you know, it's so important to me that those people remain both heroes as well as reminders that, you know, we are potentially able, you know, under attack, and I would be surprised, frankly, if we got through tomorrow without being attacked in one, if not many, ways.
Hmm. So 20 years ago, were you working with the military then?
20 years ago, I was doing pro bono work for the military as a lawyer. So I can't say that I was working with the military like I did with Chris or something of that nature. Certainly not writing with them yet, but I was definitely doing pro bono work with them.
What was some of their reactions to 9/11?
You know, my thoughts was that, you know, it caused so many guys to join. And that whole generation of guys that joined like Chris really did it because of watching the towers go down.
Hmm.
You know, I think it really in galvanized that patriotic feeling amongst those that are willing to serve. And I think that it brought to stark light, you know, the fact that we are, you know, being attacked. We were being attacked. And we had to do something about it. And I think it brought a lot of good men and women into our armed forces that otherwise may not have done it. And certainly Chris Kyle was an example of that, you know, that ended up devoting their life to the defense of this country.
Well, looking at the loss of Afghanistan, what has that meant to the military to see those 20 years of blood, sweat, and tears go to complete waste? I mean, what's this done for their outlook, especially for such things as military recruitment? What are you hearing on that?
You know, I'm sure it's devastating to the recruiting effort, but I haven't really talked to any recruiters lately, so I don't know that. But I'll guarantee it's devastating to those men that did time over there and that fought over there. And that, you know, and it's devastating also, you know, to the extent you see those that backed us, those that were our allies, the interpreters, the families, the people that devoted themselves to the United States and helped us out, you know, inside their country, that are now being left as cannon fodder or whatever, sheep to the slaughter, you know, on a regime as bad as what we're dealing with here with this Taliban. Because people should never forget what the Taliban are. They're a bunch of throat cutters just like the rest of them, if not worse.
Yes.
They, you know, and I think it's very dangerous for us and very unfair for us to have left them there. And, you know, but it just shows that this regime that's currently in power here is completely incompetent at best, if not intentionally, you know, doing things in opposition to our, you know, United States interests.
Sure. Well, I think the other thing that must make this difficult to deal with is it wasn't so much a loss of a war of Afghanistan, but it was their own military commanders that sabotaged them and all their efforts.
Sure. And, you know, and look, the bottom line is it's like everything else in a situation like you deal with here, you know, in a place like Afghanistan, you know, it was always has been known as the destroyer of empires. And, you know, and then there's a reason for that, because you can take every single town, every single major city, every single major road, every you know, aspect of that country, and still they will come back. And still the Taliban, the Mujahideen, that attitude that is at the 10,000 foot level of in the Hindu Kush does not want democracy as we believe in it. Mm-hmm. They do not want their women and children to read. They do not want, if you will, the democratic values and Western values that we espouse. And that was really our mistake, was thinking that we could change the minds of those people to want that. And even if a majority of it is there, when you've got 30% or 40% of your population, or even 20% that will violently oppose it, then you have nothing but civil war at any given time. And that's exactly where Afghanistan is again.
Yep, absolutely. Real quick, we've got about 30 seconds here with you. You have some charities that you work with veterans. I think some of those deal with veterans who are potentially suicidal. Could you mention those, and how can people find out more about them?
Yeah, I back the SEAL Team Fund very highly. You know, I back the SEAL Team Foundation very highly. And I back Operation 300. Which is another for kids of fallen soldiers that they do college scholarships, camps, things of this nature for kids of fallen soldiers. So Operation 300, you know, the SEAL Team Foundation, the SEAL Team Fund, I all have vetted them, and they're all great organizations, and I totally 100% recommend them for donation.
Well, Scott, I want to thank you so much for your time. Afghanistan may not embrace freedom, but here in America, we certainly do. And I believe that better days are ahead of us as we wrestle with what's happening right now here in the White House. Scott, I want to thank you so much for your time.
Keep up the fight, Mark. We cannot quit. We got to resolve now. Everybody out there listening has got to realize we cannot stop now. Now is the time we got to push and push hard back on the other side.
That's absolutely right. You know, one of the worst aspects of this pandemic is that the government has changed the data whenever they need to make things look worse, changed the goalposts for their mandates. They even changed the definition of herd immunity, where it is no longer a natural effect of natural immunity. Now it's only when enough people get vaccinated. Really? How did we get herd immunity before vaccines? If herd immunity wasn't real, the very first virus would have killed us all off. I'm not a litigious guy. I don't like lawsuits, but good Lord, everything that America is and stands for, freedom and liberty, are under attack from every angle, and where are the thousands of lawsuits? Be sure to check out today's show page on iSpyRadio.com. We'll have links to sign up for Dennis's newsletter, Scott's books, and tons of related information, and some new features to make it easier to share on social media. Help us spread the word, the real truth, because as we say every week, the best information does you no good if you don't use it. Reagan, what do you think?
I do not believe in a fate that will fall on us no matter what we do. I do believe in a fate that will fall on us if we do nothing.
It's more than a show. It's self-defense. The I Spy Radio Show.